So this is the subcommittee that has been put in place by the committee in terms of the National Assembly rules. And I'm going to chair the committee, and without a waste of time, I will also just make sure that before you introduce yourself, you also know who are the members. But as I said, it's just the subcommittee that reports back to the committee. And this is the order also in terms of how the questions would be asked by members. Honorable Kubeka is on my far right there. Then we have Honorable Fab, who just in front of you there. Still in front of you, we have got Honorable Machozi. We also have Honorable Mulala. We have Honorable Dr. Ndlozi. Then Honorable Van Dam is right at the back. Martin Maneri is the chair of the session. As I said, we'll also give you an opportunity to introduce yourself, but in that introduction, Mr. Malam, you will also be just straight into your 10-minute presentation on the topic you would have chosen from those that were supplied to you by the administration. Having done that, we'll then move to members to engage with you. The engagement per member would be a maximum of 5 minutes, which includes also your answers in that. So please take note of that. So, but as I said, please feel welcome. We think it's an opportunity to engage with you, and also engage the panel. So it's over to you now. You can introduce yourself briefly, and then get to the presentation.
Yes, thank you very much. For this opportunity, I think it's a very, the ICASA Council is a very important body in a very critical industry, not just for today, but looking into the future. And in essence, a lot of my presentation is about just the criticality of that industry in and of itself, but as an enabler beyond just the industry itself. Enabler beyond just the industry itself in other sectors of our economy. By way of introduction, I come principally from an ICT background for the last 25 plus years, having started in multi-choice, and it's over the years been a passion of mine, even when I've been in other not so such core ICT sectors such as consulting and financial services. The primary focus was still very much on ICT, so I was a consultant, management consultant, advising ICT companies on anything from regulation to developing new businesses and so forth. Similarly, in financial services, I was an equity analyst rated in two sectors, media and telecommunications. And then later on as an investment banker. So as I said, it's really been the industry that I've been foremost focused on, but also in particular because of the rapid changes in that industry, and as time goes by, the changes are actually becoming even more rapid, requiring people such as myself who consider themselves advisors to try to keep up. It's not the easiest thing in the world when you're talking about a variety of industry changes that are as rapid as this. So that kind of summarizes who I am in a nutshell. I suppose the last thing I should say is that I've got a mechanical engineering degree at undergrad level, and an African history and literature degree as well, and an MBA in finance. Moving to the presentation itself, I focused on institutional frameworks for regulation, and having been involved in regulation as far back as the mid-90s, I'm patently aware of the core principles of regulation. I mean, South Africa in many ways was one of the pioneers in the developing world in terms of developing independent regulation. And independence, of course, is a key word. There's often debate about what it means, but in essence, perspective, it's really about ensuring openness, fairness, transparency, and ensuring that there is no undue influence on the functioning and the decisions of the regulator. Now, I use the word undue deliberately because there will be influence from policymakers, consumers, industry, and there must be. That's the nature of regulation. You have to take all the perspectives into account. But the key word is what type of influence that is, whether it's undue or warranted or not. And of course, there's always questions about sector-specific regulation versus competition. Ultimately, regulation should be as light touch as possible unless it's absolutely essential for it not to be. The aim of regulation is to correct failures, principally, and achieve other desired outcomes that are not necessarily achievable by leaving the market alone. But in doing that, you have to be cognizant of the fact that you have to focus on regulating what the problem is and not beyond that. Also must be cognizant of the fact that with regulation there will be distortion. So the other end of this discussion is actually ensuring that you limit the distortions that arise out of regulation and also be absolutely certain about what you're trying to regulate, how and for how long. Licensing, of course, is a key part of what a regulator does. I mean, licensing is intended in a regulatory sense to ensure that the best person, the best resource to person, best able, unless there are other societal motives, will be licensed because they're the one best suited, best able, and most likely to succeed and deliver what is desired by regulation and policy. Spectrum management, of course, is a pretty obvious one because all of this rides over a scarce resource, which must be shared, and is a limited resource. So all of that may very well also involve how to allocate the spectrum in addition to how to manage it, and it could be anything from beauty contests to auctions. And then, of course, there's always... it's important to always view systems, networks of this nature, as socio-technical systems. Alongside the technical nature of these infrastructures is also societal goals. So this infrastructure is always a socio-technical infrastructure, and therefore issues of universal access. And this is key also in terms of constitutional principles of inclusivity and also development economics principles of inclusivity. Without inclusivity, you get retarded growth and retarded development. So services must be as widely available as possible. And then, of course, interconnection has always been a key one because with the liberalization of markets, you now have multiple telecoms operators, and these networks must speak to each other in the interests of consumers. Now, that was very much a, if you will, an ITU view of what regulation is all about and the foundations of it. This is very much more of a local view of what we are dealing with, and a lot of it comes out of the policy review, the ICT policy review of 2015. Now, a lot of the principles are the same, right? We talk about the open internet. Now, this is a new era in regulation versus what we were talking about in the 1990s. There was no internet then. So now we have to deal with issues about how available, open and accessible the internet is, because it is a critical global network that enables development and communication. And then you now have to talk about the digital society and some of the changes that I was talking about that are the rapid, very often confusing changes. A lot of them fall in that sphere of digitization and digitalization. So issues about e-government and making services accessible to citizens. It's a lot easier to do it today than it was when I started out in this industry. Back then, I mean, pretty much all the networks were discrete, separate networks. Today, everything is interconnected, so it's a lot easier to deliver all of these services. But again, there's a lot of confusion because of some of the new services that are being introduced and where they lie in the regulatory spectrum. So, for instance, you could speak about fintech. Now, fintech is the evolution of financial services towards technology-driven model. We look at countries like China, who almost instantly went from being a hopelessly underdeveloped country in a banking sense to almost overnight basically catching up to the rest of the world. And they did that using technology, fintech, digital payment systems, digitization of banks, etc., etc. Now, again, in that, we're talking about not so much the data network, although you need that to deliver the services, but we're also talking about the data that rides over these networks, and it's critical to understand that. And therefore also goes back to what I originally started talking about what the networks mean in terms of improving accessibility of services. And fintech is a classic example of that. Now, one of the interesting things about fintech is that it really exploded in the post-2009 era when a lot of people were getting laid off in the global recession that happened in that period in the financial services industry. And because a lot of them were so young and technologically capable, they had no choice but to develop new ways of doing the same thing. And that's where that comes from. Now, of course, market structure is always a key element of assessing regulatory effectiveness. Very often markets do not perform as they should. So there's always got to be an assessment of whether the market is performing as desired or not. But in order to do that, again, going back to the principle that I stated before, regulation always distorts. So you've got to be clear about what market you're talking about. So you can't talk in general terms and say telecommunications or in general terms and say media. You've got to define more succinctly what that market exactly is and what the problems within that market are and how to fix that market. And that's what we refer to as a relevant market. It's always got to be addressed. Now, there are also other issues, obviously, that are very pertinent to us here that are almost, if you will, have remained unaddressed for quite a while or needed review, not necessarily because they were neglected before, but because things change. So the television market, for instance, needs to be reassessed. Subscription television, the impact of over-the-top services like a Netflix on our landscape have to be assessed, understood, and we have to take a position. So a lot of the principles, as I say, that underpin what we are talking about here, which is very South Africa-specific, are the very, very much the principles that the ITU speaks about. Now, again, I want to emphasize the one thing. With the rapid change, there are a lot of minefields now, and the nature of regulation and the coordination of regulation across different types of regulatory spheres. So when you talk about data use and protection, for instance, it may very well be in the domain of an information regulator, but it has an impact on regulation and decisions that are taken in a networks type regulatory environment, which is what ICASA is, networks and content. Now, similarly, OTT content service, just put it in perspective. When we started DSTV in 1995, we expected to have 250,000 subscribers at best. We're talking now 15 million, but now consider Netflix. It's got 10 times that. It's in about 130-odd countries versus, 54 for multi-choice. When you look at the scale of this, the implications of what this means for us, we haven't begun to even explore this, but all of these questions must be answered, and they must be answered in a rational way. Evidence must guide what we do, but ultimately, we do need to answer those. Digital taxation is another one. So you've got a company that might be located in Ireland, right? That's where they pay their tax. But they operate here, and they don't pay any tax here. In fact, they declare losses in South Africa, perhaps if they have local presence at all. That often happens. All of these things need to be understood. And similarly, what all of this evolution means, from a morality point of view, some artificial intelligence, robotics, e-mobility. E-mobility is an interesting one because we're talking about cars, vehicles. But in fact, in the e-mobility age, electric vehicles are actually computers on wheels, right? And all of them are connected to a network. So electric vehicles work on the principle of connectivity and intelligence, and all of this requires networks. What are the implications for us? And then you also start to have impact in other infrastructure sectors. E-mobility requires energy. You now have an impact in the energy sphere. The new age of regulation requires an understanding of multiple principles. Back in the day, we could get away with just simply understanding a router and a switch and a cable. Not anymore. We now have to understand the moral issues, for instance, that are impacted by artificial intelligence. We have to understand economic impacts a lot more. We have to understand competitiveness, national competitiveness, and what all of this means for us as a country in moving forward and becoming more competitive in a world that's becoming more and more cruel. So in this age, what we call the fourth industrial revolution, what many call the fourth industrial revolution, is that unlike the first three, things move so rapidly. If you're slow, you become even more underdeveloped than you were before because everybody else moves so quickly. I mean, just take the examples of Asian countries and how rapidly they developed on the back of technology. Now, finally, just to put it all again in a summary form in perspective, take these four companies. You could argue that Apple is not a new company, but in its new guise, it is a new company, essentially from around 1995, which is incidentally when DSTV was launched, but what, 9 years after Mnet came into being. Today, Apple, Amazon, Google, Facebook are twice the size in terms of market capitalization as those horrific monsters, telecoms companies in the U.S. put together. Right? Now you take the magnitude of what they mean in the context of our own world. We would have to figure out a way to fit in this landscape where you've got these global monsters with enormous resources and reach. This is the world we live in today, and regulation must appropriately address those. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Palamo. Would now take questions from members having listened to your presentation. Honorable Kubeka.
Thank you, Chair, and also welcome to Ntate Palamo. I can see that he's too glued on the side of the technology, actually. So Ntate Palamo, on the data market inquiry, what are the biggest disagreements or the differences in approach between the ICASA and the Competition Commission on the data price regulation, and how can we be reconciled actually on that data pricing regulation?
Thank you for the question. This is a classic example of where competition regulation meets sector regulation. And where they may very well be discord. And by the way, it's not a bad thing. The disagreements, arguments, debates are a good thing. But we, in many ways, because of the liberalization of the market, so Telkom wasn't a monopoly anymore. You now had Vodacom, you had MTN, then later Cell C, and in fact many other operators now. So the data market now is extremely diverse. There's probably 100-odd operators providing data services in some form or other. So in that context, you would have thought there's probably sufficient competition to drive prices down. Now, a lot of times it works. And by the way, the interesting thing is that the U.S., which has been competitive for many, many, many years, right, data prices in the U.S. are twice what they cost in Europe. And in that case, one of the beliefs is that there's been so much market consolidation in the U.S. that there's too few players. Now, in our case, those are the questions we have to answer, right? From a competition perspective, first is we have to understand, is there sufficient competition? Where are the bottlenecks? So those relevant markets that you define, you got to go down to the nitty-gritty and say, in this relevant market, this is where the problem lies, there's not enough competition, if that is the case. Now, because it's not happening driven by competition, ICASA is forced to act or pressured to act from a sector perspective. Now, in all of this, what is most difficult, and even for me as an industry person, what is most difficult, and I'm not sure about the underlying research done on this, it's very difficult to figure out who believes who, right? What is the provable evidence about whether the costs are too high or policies restricting the reduction in data prices, or indeed regulation is doing that. All of that is murky. Now, I don't know the inner workings of ICASA all that well these days, back in the day I used to. But for me, I'd like to see evidence. I'd like to see evidence about whether spectrum is the cause of high data prices or not. And if it is, why? Somebody's got to demonstrate it. And I haven't seen anything from the operators other than simply, the, you know, saying it. Somewhere in there, there's got to be some truth that's evidence-based. I know it's a bit of a roundabout way of answering the question, but I don't want to commit myself to an answer because I don't even think any of the actors involved actually have the answer themselves. One of the reasons I want to be a regulator is because I want to see the answer. I want to interrogate the answer.
I don't take honorable form.
Thank you, Chair. I was hoping that Mulalo would help me with the presentation, but it's fine. I'll use Ms. Lebogang, if you don't mind. Thank you for your presentation. It was informative. I've got three questions, Chair. I'm taking advantage of what Honorable Njoze was doing. One, my first question is, what is your understanding of the gazetted policy on high demand spectrum recently released by the minister? I will give you time to respond to that before I go to my second question. If it allows, Chair, then.
The spectrum obviously is a limiter, it's a barrier to entry of some sort, right, to delivering services. And it's a barrier to operators, whether you're big or small. The prioritization of allocation of data for specific purposes is absolutely the correct path to take if you believe that there is such a bottleneck. Right. So if going back to the original question that was asked and my response about competition, for instance, if there's a belief that we need more competition, then you're not going to get more competition without ensuring that newer players other than the dominant ones obtain spectrum. That much is pretty obvious. That's one. But two, if you think it's advisable to introduce more black-empowered companies into the industry, then you have to address it in spectrum in some way or other. Now, high-demand spectrum is exactly that. It's extremely valuable. It's valuable in the new age. And it's important to understand that when we get to 5G, we're not actually talking about an evolution of broadband, mobile broadband as we know. We're talking about a revolution. So if you're not in it, and which means you don't have spectrum, you'll be permanently left behind. 5G is not an evolutionary technology. It's a new fundamental structure of how to deliver mobile broadband. It does amazing things. I mean, we don't want to spend all the time talking about these things here. So if the desire is to introduce more players, new players, black players, then you have to set aside the spectrum in some way or other and deal with this premium spectrum, if you will, in different ways than we've done previously.
Thank you, Chair. My second question is a follow-up to this one. Your understanding of the regulatory objective as announced in the information memorandum issued by ICASA. What is your understanding objective as announced by the information memorandum issued by ICASA?
Yeah, I'm going to ask you to guide me there. Which information memorandum is that one?
Deployment of digital infrastructure.
I must admit, I'm not familiar with that one.
Okay. Part of your presentation, you mentioned market name. So my question will be, do you have knowledge of the structure of the mobile network markets and the effectiveness on small players? You know, we talk about transformation. The sector is mainly dominated by big guns, but how would you give small players a chance?
Yeah, again, it goes partly to the previous question about spectrum and set-asides and high-demand spectrum. But more broadly than that, I mean, it's pretty obvious that we have essentially two very dominant players in the telecoms market. I mean, I think by now we all know that the other two players that we thought were also part of that group aren't exactly, and that's Telkom and Cell C, because both are a little bit wobbly and don't have the resources and the market strength that the other two have. So going forward, we have to analyze how we can ensure sustainability for some of the smaller players in the industry. It is key to do that, because you cannot have complete dominance by two players come to mind. Obviously, there are other players, as I indicated earlier on, that are maybe smaller, more regional, maybe more niche, perhaps they're more focused on fiber markets. But if you go back to the relevant market, which is mobile broadband, then you have to address it in that context of mobile broadband. And I feel there actually has to be a fundamental relook of that industry. I'm not talking at a superficial level because there's a data price crisis. I'm talking fundamentally a far-right relook of that market and what we need to do, particularly in view of this whole transition to 5G and the impact it will have and what it means for anybody that's not in it.
Thank you, Honorable Fagu. We now move to Honorable Machozi.
Thank you, Chair. It's still morning, no, afternoon. afternoon, Mr. Bupalamo. Thank you for the presentation. But my question would be, what is your knowledge of legislative prescripts governing the ICT sector, especially in the new era of convergence? And maybe the chairperson, just on the follow up question of what Honorable Fagu asked, I wanted to know what role will you play if you are appointed, as you said that there might be a company that is somewhere but operating in South Africa and does not pay tax. What will be your role in the ICASA that you will play to make sure that we then try to regulate for those companies that are abroad, that are operating here, and that they should pay their taxes, and also they should bring on board the small players? How will you be able to manage that? I just wanted to bring questions, Jefferson.
Okay. Legislation, firstly. So there is a need to review our legislative framework, and I think it was almost implicit in my presentation that our legislative framework is not conducive to what happens next technologically. A lot of it is kind of based on what events that were happening and changes that were happening in these industries 25 years ago. So I was involved in the telecoms colloquium and the broadcasting colloquium, and we thought we were revolutionary. I look at it now and it's ancient. One of the reasons it's critical to relook at it is because the nature of these services has changed. The nature of the players has changed. Where before you could limit, and that kind of goes to the second question, where before you could limit somebody coming into South Africa, we just block them. We can't do that today. Right? China did that, but we're not China. Right? So, the other part of the answer, and if you look at all the questions and the themes in the ICT policy, the ICT policy review, a lot of the discussion around spectrum. Much of this discussion is really not even focused where most of the value in the ICT industry lies. It is focused on pipes, right? Spectrum issues, access to licenses. You know, that graphic tells you what we should be doing right? Obviously, you must answer all of these questions in as comprehensively, as fairly as possible about networks and people getting access to licenses, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, one, networks are the most difficult to fund, right? Where the greatest risk is. The services, the barriers to entry are much lower. Somebody in their garage can create a service similar to those. Obviously, there are questions about whether they can actually scale it up because we don't have venture capital markets in this country, et cetera, et cetera, and our population is small, low income, et cetera. But in theory, the services on top do not require you to have any CASA license, do not require you to have spectrum, do not require you to have 10 billion rands, right? We need to do more there. That's where we really need to drive our industry, our ICT industry. The networks we must take for granted. They've been around forever. We know how to do that. Sure, we must answer the question about diversity of players in the industry and the cost of data prices, etc., etc. That's important. But the value lies at the top. We need to do more there. And if we don't do that, almost to answer a question directly about, say, a Netflix that doesn't pay tax here, you can't even get started in answering that question because fundamentally you're not offering that service anyway. Sure, from a tax perspective, they must pay the tax, but from a regulatory perspective, in any CASA sense, it's difficult to argue that you want to regulate Netflix when we're not driving those kinds of industries ourselves.
Honorable Majosi covered on that point. Now, Honorable Malala.
Yeah, and the Voila, I'm the only one who pronounces proper. I want you to give me a scenario here in South African context. We leave the world market now in our own country. We spoke about the managed liberalization of the market. You've got two dominant players. You've got the public demanding the reduction of data on the other side. If you were to be appointed, because from where I'm sitting, the two dominant, how do you then avoid what is called a capture in that cycle of both governments, the players, industry, and the people? Because we need an intervention. The reason is because of intervention between the three main dominant players. In your own view, in this case, in this system.
You know what? I've had a pretty varied career where I started off in fact, in the energy industry at ESCOM. Was in a very consulting role, ended up in MultiChoice in a kind of development of the DSTV business plan, financial and operational sense, to regulation, to being an equity analyst, investment banking, consulting, etc. Now, one of the things that I've learned, and all of this was deliberate because I wanted a well-rounded understanding of the industry pretty much from as many facets as possible. One of the things that always strikes me when we talk about these things here is the lack of evidence, and that's what I mentioned earlier on. Right? What I pride myself on is getting a fundamental understanding. Right? I don't want to hear stories flying around in the media, etc. I want to get a proper fundamental understanding. When an operator says, I cannot do this because it's going to cost me that, they must demonstrate it. Now, one of the things I used to do as an equity analyst, I used to have to model the operations of all of these operators. I had a Vodacom model, I had an MTN model, a Telkom model, a Naspers model, an MIH model, a Kaffeson Media model, a Kexton model, as in understanding the fundamentals of what goes on in those businesses. That's what we have to do. Because right now there's a lot of talking at cross purposes. But again, I still don't see real evidence. Now, this is absolutely critical because we cannot continue this way. We're clearly our data prices are way too high. We know that. where in all of this, if we don't address it now, it's going to have a negative impact going forward because of the dependence on these networks that all of these technological changes require. For me, the big thing is let's get to a proper understanding of what the facts are. And when I talk about facts, I'm talking about the facts from a technology point of view, financial point of view, economic point of view, etc., etc. Not at a superficial level. Regulation needs to be a lot more detailed.
Yeah. Just on a follow-up, Chair. I think on Mali's liberalization, they affect Mr. Kwala. There's two dominant players. It means you were not able to liberalize. Would you say in this instance our regulator has failed? If you were to go give us an analysis, because our own telecoms has gone down, Cell C has literally collapsed now. has it worked? And where have we failed in your own view? If you were to advise.
It's hard to argue that the regulator has failed because, in fact, and we can talk even beyond telecommunications, but let's focus on that for the moment. MTN and Vodacom were licensed. Telecom was already around. Cell C was later licensed. The market was opened up to other players who could do services in niche areas, etc., etc. Now, the fundamental problem is that Cell C never really took off, right? Where perhaps you could argue that the regulator failed is in the time it took to take action when Cell C struggled, right? There should have been a little bit more of an enabling regime when Cell C was licensed from the beginning. A lot of the actions that were taken, so for instance, call termination rate regulation, really were after the fact when pretty much the horse had bolted. So in some ways you could argue that. But the fundamental thing is that Cell C itself was not very well run. We banked Cell C at NetBank, and we had a close view. I should be cautious about what I say, but anyway, I think the market knows.
Do you still have time?
That's what I thought. Honorable Dr. Ndlozi.
Thanks, Chairperson. My first two questions are a bit direct. You wrote a poem book, ne? Is that you? The Rising Tide. So you are a poet.
I don't know.
Yes or no? Yeah, I'm just checking some important things. You are a poet. It's a poem book, no?
I don't consider myself.
Oh, but you write poetry.
Yes.
But you're not a poet. There is some case, man, I need you to clarify me. There is a person with your similar name who was involved in some theft. What I could pull is a judgment from the Gauteng High Court on the 6th of March 2014 in which this Lebogang Mopalamo appeals and fails. Is that you? Is a different... Okay, so these might be two different people. That's fine. You're saying that Facebook must be taxed in South Africa. How would you do that?
I didn't directly say Facebook.
What I said was these companies, they actually deliberately create financial and tax structures to avoid taxation in a lot of the markets they operate in. So they will use tax havens to do this. They will structure themselves in such a way that they do not show.
Okay, you are ICASA now. What do you do? That's the direct question. That's the problem statement. Majority of over-the-top programs, not just those that broadcast, but, you know, Amazon as well and all of that. They don't pay taxes here. You say that's a problem. How would you recommend a structure in which we are able to get taxes?
Firstly, I wasn't addressing that as an ICASA issue. I was addressing that as a national issue that involves ICASA as being a regulator in the combination case.
Okay, that's fine. Let's say, what are the regulatory obligations that you think ICASA would have on Netflix?
ICASA's obligations would be, firstly, coordination with other regulators. Now, one of the things I said is that we need to have regulatory and legislative coherence because it's not well suited to what's happening today. That's the first thing I said. Now, ICASA is important in that because it is a regulator in a communication sense, and a lot of these things run on communications networks and in some instances are actually communication services. Right. So ICASA will always have a role in doing something like that. If the desire,
what would be the obligations of ICASA on the regulation of Netflix? Direct answers, man.
The obligations of ICASA are to regulate in a communication sense. These services run on networks. Okay, so one of the arguments that operators used to have, which they've kind of toned down these days, was that these over-the-top services run on their networks, and therefore they should be paying them for that. That's an issue your customer must address.
Okay, I don't know if I understand you. So the what? Okay, there are regulations against the SABC by ICASA in implementing or broadcasting on digital platforms. They use the term digital platform, which would be these OTTs. Are you aware of those regulations? And if so, do you think they are fair? Should they be changed? What is your perspective?
We talk about SABC regulations. Could you mention the SABC just now?
Are you aware of the ICASA regulations against or that speak to the SABC's broadcasting capabilities on digital platforms?
Yes.
Okay. Tell me about them, and do you think they should be changed? Are they fair? What's your perspective?
Well, you see, it depends on what you mean by digital. So, for me, if I had to talk about SABC in a digital sense, first of all, I would have to address SABC in a digital sense in terms of broadcasting networks. Now, that's digital. There's also the other kind of digital, which is the stuff that flows online.
What are those
that's
regulations?
A different thing.
Are you aware of those regulations?
No, I'm not aware of those regulations.
Then you should have said that. Okay. My final question.
In the minute you have.
I only have a minute. Okay. What were you doing at MultiChoice?
When I first joined, I was responsible for running the DSTV launch program. So I was project manager for it, developing the financial business plan. And later on,
who is Mlamli Boy?
He's the CEO of Centec.
Of Centec. You are aware that he nominated you?
Yes.
Do you know why?
Well, he believes I'm capable.
Okay. My very final. So my skepticism is, you know, the circulation of people who have been in this industry and who have done nothing to change it structurally. Everything that happens is to reinforce the power of MultiChoice, reinforce the power of big players in the ICT. And in everything that you say, you don't speak about breaking this power. And you come from a recommendation of Santec, which is a big impediment to SABC's capacity for digital broadcasting on one hand. On the other, if SABC should move away from DTT, Santec will close. And that's going to be depending largely on the regulations that must be changed in ICASA. Have you been sent to stop that?
No,
it is.
My question. It's the final question. I want his reaction to that. You just said yes.
No. You asked me if I was sent to do something, and I said nobody sent me.
Yeah, but I want you to give me a sense of your perspective. If you're not nominated to reinforce the existing powers in the industry, in both sectors, having spoken both in your presentation and in your answers, you don't speak about breaking the power of these sectors. Should I think that even if you're not sent, you are comfortable with the domination that is happening within these sectors?
I spoke at length.
Speak about whether you want to break them or not, and held my final.
I spoke at length about the telecoms industry and the power of MTN and Vodacom and some of the regulatory missteps, and why it's critical that we ensure inclusivity, not just in terms of inclusivity of consumers to getting these services, but inclusivity of multiple operators to receiving frequencies and becoming competitive. Now, in the multi-choice sense, there hasn't actually been a question about multi-choice at all since I've been sitting here. I have a view on multi-choice and the pay television market, by the way. So the first part of the problem is the scale of multi-choice. Remember, licenses have been issued twice for competitors to multi-choice, and both occasions they failed. Now, one of the key problems with competing with multi-choice, the obvious ones we know, sports rights, premium movie rights, we know that. Now, a regulation can address that because it's been done elsewhere, where you break up access to those sports rights, all right? Break down access to those movie rights. That's been done elsewhere so that you can do. What's not so easy to do? You see, if you have an operator with 10 million customers and you want to launch a service against them, you must remember that everything they do at a lower cost per subscriber than you do. It doesn't matter what you do. You will always be playing catch-up all the time. Now, that's the reason why competition didn't work in Greece, in the UK, and that's why you got Sky now, because it was an amalgamation of PSB and Sky, or the previous Sky. The same thing happened in France. Much the same thing is happening now in the U.S. And that is the fundamental thing, where you end up having this battle between two players, where one, basically, their marketing cost is 1 cent per subscriber. The next guy, the marketing cost is 20 rands per subscriber. Ultimately, they end up having to merge. So even if you introduce competition to multi-choice, I can guarantee you they're going to end up merging. Where the mistake was it not enabling terrestrial digital television to become more pay TV capable? First of all, it took too long, way too long. Secondly, the policy-making framework and the regulatory framework was all over the place, such that there actually is no digital television today. That was one of the prime opportunities to introduce competition against multi-choice. And then they would have had the justification and the platform to say, now let's regulate the sports and the movies. Now what you have today, you have an even bigger problem because digital terrestrial television hasn't happened. Now you've got Netflix. Now multi-choice is in the same position where the small guy who could not do marketing at 1 cent per subscriber and can only do it at 20 rands per subscriber because they've got too few subscribers, that's the problem multi-choice now faces against Netflix. You've got to answer all of these questions comprehensively. There is no single answer about what a regulator did wrong, what multi-choice did wrong. Answer all of them.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Mr. Bopalamo. I just want to have a conversation with you. So I'm not terribly interested in what ICASA used to do. ICASA is a very big entity that moves very slowly. They don't really do very much. So I'm interested in how you envisage ICASA's role going into the digital revolution. Do you see it as an organization that's there to enable or to restrict? You particularly spoke about taxing Facebook, taxing Netflix. Do you see ICASA's role as being that, or is it to enable?
The simple answer is ICASA's role is enablement. That's the primary thing. Now, of course, enablement could be subjective as well. So they enable industry growth, that's one, but you can enable industry growth in a monopoly situation, actually. Maybe it won't be sustainable, but you can. So you must, they must enable in a as inclusive a way as possible. So enable industry growth, enable prices to come down, enable consumers to access services, enable new services to be created, enable the quick processing of their internal processes, regulatory processes, etc. That's what e-customers do. Now, when you talk about the future and e-customers' role, right, there will always be a telecommunications market where you need a network to deliver information, data, and so forth. So that role will remain. The question that I'm asking, in a sense, is where is the all-encompassing legislative framework that takes all of the digital changes, digital technology changes, into account, and therefore, if need be, redefines not just the role of ICASA, but the role of the Competition Commission, the role of whatever other industry regulator is affected and influenced by this. So when we talk about e-mobility, for instance, there is no framework for e-mobility. Now, in the e-mobility world, you have networks, you have service providers akin to the old telecommunication service providers that the operators bought back, because those are the people that actually enable the management of charging stations, right? Now, then you have a new network which also includes energy. All of this must be put in a pot, reworked, and something produced that works going into the future. It's not necessarily that I'm saying ICASA must tax anyone. I'm saying all of these things must be addressed, and whoever it is that must do that, that must do that. Right now, we're not prepared.
So I guess what I'm looking for is fresh new ideas. There's very kind of traditional ways of thinking, which is not what we need going into a digital revolution. We need people that are creative, that can think on their feet, that can, you know, provide new solutions to old problems. So do you see yourself as a person? Are you nimble? Are you fast? You know, if a new type of technology comes into the market, would you be able to bring fresh ideas into ICASA? That's what I'm trying to establish and hear, because I listen very carefully to each answer you give the members, and I don't see that kind of thinking. I don't see anything fresh, anything new, anything creative.
Well, one of the interesting things about this new phase of technology, so you look at those players at the top there, right? What I always tell people as a consultant is the new era of technology and economic development, sure, you require coding skills, you might require 3D printing capabilities in order to 3D print computers or something instead of doing it the way we used to do. But ultimately, all of the tools that do all of that, so you take a Facebook or a Twitter, if in their technology stack there's maybe 20 technologies in there, most of them are stock standard. What's not standard is the creativity. Now, the kinds of people that you need in ICASA are not only people that have strong research capabilities and strong analytical capabilities, strong writing skills, obviously, but you also need people that are creative. And that's also true for industry, by the way. So, look, I can't tell you that I'm the most creative guy in the world, because it's not my place to say so. But I think I am
sell yourself. If you think you're creative, sell yourself.
Look, let's put it this way. In the equity analysis world, it is precisely that combination of skills you require. In order to be able to analyze companies, develop an investment view on them, advise global fund managers on it, assess it against competitors. Not only do you need the financial modeling capability, the ability to analyze the business, but you also need creative skills and some good things as well.
Okay, thank you very much. I just have one last question. So you have
You're a partner in Novelta Projects and Data Advisors. And you do work in evaluation of ICT policy, technology trends, etc. So your, would you say your company works in the ICT sector? You derive financial... okay, so the ICASA Act, what do you know about the ICASA Act and what it says about individuals who derive or have financial interest in the sector?
Yes, I'm patently aware of that. And by the way, what you missed is that I'm also an investor in the sector, so all of that will have to be unraveled.
Okay, so in terms of Section 6.1 of the ICASA Act, a person may not be appointed as a counselor if he or she or his or her family member has direct or indirect financial interest in the telecoms or broadcasting industry, or has a business, or is a partner or business associate in the same industry. Are you not such an individual?
Yes, currently I am. So the intention would be to exit all of those activities.
Would you exit all of those?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Jim.
Mr. Balam, just to go back again to the market structure that you talked to. Currently, as we speak, we already have infrastructures sharing, whether you call it roaming or whatever you call it, but it has not really changed the way the market is in terms of the collapse of those that have been brought into the market. What's your take? Is it a regulatory problem? And if that is the case, what is to be done to fix such? Because I think in your presentation, we're arguing more that the risk of putting up the infrastructure is where people not go but look at services. But if we already have that and we're already experiencing some problems, what is to be done in that regard?
Just a little correction. I did emphasize the services because that's where the value lies, which is pretty apparent. But what I was saying is that that value does not materialize if the underlying networks are not functional or adequately functional and prices are too high. So yes, the value lies there, but you still have to answer the underlying question. Now, it's hard sometimes to argue that regulators did something wrong. Now, one of the things that, by the way, happened in developed markets was this whole story around local loop unbundling. Back in the day, when the mobile operators were not this strong, one of the key focus areas in regulation in telecommunications to bring down prices was to open up the local loop to competitors. So, for instance, in the context of when Neotel was licensed, I can't remember how many years ago it was, one of the first things that would have needed to happen, ultimately I think ICASA did look at it, but it was years later. But the interesting thing is that it has been found that in many of those developed markets, actually, local loop unbundling didn't do anything. It just created problems. And in fact, in some instances, prices even rose. Or the new operators just were not interested in the local loop at all. So you do make mistakes. Now, the key thing in regulation is to continually evaluate what you do. And you need to do it quickly. So we have a tendency here to write things and implement them and then only re-loop them 10 years later. Technology moves much quicker than that. What I'm saying is that this evidence-based approach that I speak about, it has to be a continual process. So sometimes you need policy interventions, and it's ICASA's job to say to the policymakers, okay, now we're at the point where what we do won't help here. You need to do something from a policy perspective. I'm not saying that there's one single answer to all of these problems. But what I'm saying is that there must be a continual evaluation of what works, what doesn't, corrective measures, how long you let things run for, etc. And really, really understanding the fundamentals of all of these businesses. So the whole discussion, for instance, about pay TV and why it's failed, it's never happened.
From where I'm sitting, honorable members, you've had an opportunity to ask the question. I was just making a follow-up on it. Question that has has been asked, which you tried to answer. May I take this opportunity to also thank you for sharing your experience and quite an engagement. I think it's an important form. And of course, I'll give you this opportunity to say your last word.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you very much for the time. I always enjoy these sorts of engagements, particularly from people that are not necessarily core in the industry, operationally, etc., etc. Because what often happens, and that's one of the things you must understand, and then I'm talking now from the perspective of somebody that was in the industry, and I was head of regulatory affairs, and I'm head of multi-choice, is that human nature is such that sometimes, sure, there might be malice in the view you take as an executive and a multi-chair board, or could just looking after your own interests. And I mean, guys are well paid when things go right? So they look after their profits and themselves. That's human nature. But sometimes also, you will develop a natural bias. Right. You always have a natural bias towards something. In technology, I've heard the term used, technology bigot. All right. So that is why you have to dig into what's in there. Now, again, as somebody that did run regulatory affairs at MNET or Multichoice, again, I should be careful about this, but sometimes we knew the position we were taking wasn't necessarily like good for everybody. Sometimes we also knew that the position that or a regulation that we accept isn't necessarily good for us, but we can live with it. This is why regulation requires a lot more insight, a lot more depth, a lot more research, a lot more evidence, and quite honestly, a lot more experienced people.
Anything else, the comments
supposed to be from you?
Thank you very much. Honorable members, looking at time,